Welcome. I'm Rose Aguilar, host of Your Call. You're listening to the Project 2025 What's in It podcast, a special series from KALW Public Media about the far right's agenda outlined in what they're calling Project 2025 Mandate for Leadership, the Conservative Promise. This Heritage Foundation-led plan lays out a comprehensive agenda to transform the United States into a conservative Christian nation under Donald Trump. Project 2025 would dismantle the administrative state and ensure arch-conservative rule for decades to come. It would affect all aspects of life and would be implemented by expanding presidential powers and eliminating federal agencies. One note before we dig in. When this show originally aired live on KALW, we took calls and emails. If you have a comment or perspective to share, email us at project2025@kalw.org. Today, we continue our series on Project 2025, the 920-page plan authored by the Heritage Foundation and almost 100 far-right groups that would guide a second Trump administration and transform the country into an authoritarian Christian state. The authors write, "Nothing is more important than deconstructing the centralized administrative state." That goal was first laid out by Steve Bannon, Donald Trump's former White House chief strategist, who's currently serving a four-month sentence in federal prison for contempt charges related to the January 6th insurrection. Kevin Roberts, the president of the Heritage Foundation, recently told MSNBC that the plan is also to fire more than 50,000 federal employees, people he calls unelected bureaucrats, and replace them with MAGA loyalists. Project 2025 would also place the Department of Justice under direct presidential control. NOAA, the National Oceanographic and Atmospheric Administration, would be dismantled. Many of its functions would be completely eliminated and sent to other agencies, privatized, or placed under the control of states and territories. The National Weather Service would be fully privatized, and the Department of Education would be completely eliminated. Project 2025 authors say they will carry out these plans by consolidating executive power. But how would all of this work specifically? Joining us are two guests. James Goodwin is policy director for the Center for Progressive Reform, a nonprofit research and advocacy organization that advocates for collective solutions to our most pressing challenges. In a recent piece for the Boston Review, James Goodman writes that Project 2025 seeks to undermine long-standing safeguards against abuses of executive power. The full piece lays out how the authors of Project 2025 intend to reprogram the U.S. administrative state to support and sustain arch-conservative rule for decades to come. Hi, James. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
We're also joined by Sean Musgrave, a media law attorney and reporter in New York, who serves as the counsel for The Intercept, a nonprofit journalism outlet that investigates powerful individuals and institutions to expose corruption and injustice. Sean Musgrave's recent piece, "The Supreme Court's Latest Power Grab, Regulatory Oversight," discusses how the court's conservative bloc is advancing Project 2025's goal of deconstructing the administrative state. Hi, Sean. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hi there. Thanks for having me on.
Well, great to have you. So, Sean, let's start off with you. You've got a piece out about how the Trump campaign is attempting to distance itself from Project 2025. Trump recently issued a statement saying he, quote, had no idea who's behind the project. What do you think explains this?
There's a lot of potential pieces that I'm still trying to figure out. But a few days before the Trump campaign put out that statement, the president of the Heritage Foundation, Kevin Roberts, appeared on a podcast. I believe it was Steve Bannon's War Room podcast, and made some pretty inflammatory statements about a second revolution. I'm paraphrasing here, but a second American revolution that would be, I believe he said, bloodless if the left allowed it to be. That got a lot of that perked up a lot of people's ears. The word bloodless in there, and shortly after that, the Trump administration, or excuse me, the Trump campaign, issued the statement denying knowledge of basically anything having to do with Project 2025.
Yes, Kevin Roberts was on Steve Bannon's War Room podcast, and while Steve Bannon is in jail, he has guest
Right.
hosts. The other thing is Project 2025 is now getting so much attention. I mean, it's everywhere. We're talking social media, major media. It was mentioned at the BET Awards. Do you think that's also part of the reason that the Trump campaign is now distancing itself because people are really doing deep dives into what this would do if Trump is elected in November?
It's certainly getting a lot more attention. I mean, the Project 2025 playbook has been out for months, and it got sporadic attention up until recently. But like you said, now there's just this explosion of interest, especially as we get closer to the party conventions, and since Trump effectively didn't have a platform for quite a long time, except for this kind of video series called Agenda 47 that also hadn't been updated in quite some time. It was pretty ad hoc in Trump's kind of typical style. I think Project 2025 gave a concrete reference text that was pretty explicitly aimed at, or that was pretty clearly aimed at what far right of the conservative legal movement would like Trump or the next conservative president to do.
James, what are your thoughts? Why do you think Trump is publicly trying to distance himself from Project 2025?
Oh, Project 2025 kind of reminds me of one of those campy old spy films where the bad guy reveals the whole plot at the beginning and the hero sort of swoops in and saves everybody at the end. The big problem with Project 2025 is they told everybody in advance all the awful things they're planning to do. And these things are all really, really unpopular. It's about it's about making being poor in this country more expensive by concentrating wealth in the elites. It's about taking away basic freedoms. It's about establishing about making our government incompetent. People, they make fun of our government and they distrust our government, but they also like having their social security checks delivered on time. They like having planes land at the airport safely. All of this was put up for grabs with Project 2025 in its very visceral sort of way. And the one thing that kept Project 2025 sort of chugging along for so long was that nobody was really paying attention to it outside of like a small policy circle. And that all changed in the last couple of weeks. And once it's like a virus. Once the first couple of people start talking about it, it just quickly spread.
It's also important to note that former Trump officials wrote and edited massive chunks of Project 2025. Sean, as you point out, one of its two primary editors, Paul Danes, who directs the Heritage Foundation's 2025 Presidential Transition Project, served as the White House liaison for the U.S. Office of Personnel Management during the Trump administration. Rick Dearborn, who was briefly Trump's deputy chief of staff, wrote the White House chapter. Russ Voigt, Trump's director of the OMB, wrote the chapter on OMB and similar executive offices. We can go down the list.
Yeah, there was too much overlap really to put into one to put into one article. You can look at the table of contents for the massive, that's more than 900 pages, the PDF is. And if you look at the author bios, just of the folks who wrote the chapters in addition to the ones that you named, the author list is stacked with former Trump officials. Another one that really stands out to me is Peter Navarro, who is a longtime Trump advisor as far back as the 2016 presidential campaign, and is now he decided to go to prison instead of cooperate with a congressional inquiry into January 6th. So, I mean, this the overlap between kind of different dimensions of Trump's of Trump world and the Project 2025 authorship is considerable.
Let's talk about what it means to deconstruct the administrative state, because the authors of Project 2025 write that nothing is more important than that. The goal was first laid out by Steve Bannon, Trump's former White House chief strategist. James, what does that mean exactly, to deconstruct the administrative state?
I mean, it sets up this kind of paradoxical scenario, right? Because it's not easy to tear down, you know, what has become such a crucial part of our constitutional system of government, something that's existed since the founding, which conservatives don't like to admit, and that has been slowly built up to meet pressing challenges over the ensuing decades. You can't just snap your finger and get rid of something that's so central to like the American political constitutional heritage. So the paradox here is you actually have to build up the state in this way to then tear it down. And that's essentially what's going on with Project 2025, right? There's a lot of state building in there. And in particular, it talks about state building by increasing the power within the White House, within the executive office that a future conservative president or Trump would ultimately hold. And there's this really striking passage in the chapter that Russ Voigt wrote on the executive office. And he describes how we have to, how, you know, the essential challenge for the president is to suck up all this power out of the executive branch, wield it within the Oval Office. And then, you know, it's not clear, but somehow there's this vague promise that this power is going to be returned to the people. Which people get this power is left undefined. It suggested that it's going to be white males, heteronormative males. If this power will ultimately get returned is a big question mark as well, right? So, I mean, and that's essentially the challenge, right? Is they have this sort of strongman theory that we've seen in other authoritarian regimes around the world of deconstructing the state, but you know, sort of the final chapters of how that's accomplished are ultimately left unwritten. Instead, we're just left in the short term to deal with this authoritarian regime.
To your point about who that would be, I mean, Kevin Roberts, the president of the Heritage Foundation, laid it out on MSNBC. He said, we're going to fire more than 50,000 federal employees and replace them with people who are accountable to the country. What he means, though, is they're going to be replaced with MAGA loyalists. And Axios reported back in November that Trump allies are pre-screening the ideologies of thousands of potential foot soldiers as part of an unprecedented operation to centralize and expand his power at every level of government. The screening for ready-to-serve loyalists has already begun, driven in part by artificial intelligence from the tech giant Oracle. They're looking at social media histories. They're asking various questions, talking about, you know, who, name one person, past or present, who's most influenced the development of your political philosophy, to do the same with a book. Another query, name one living public policy figure whom you greatly admire and why. So, I mean, this is happening right now. And I think this is so important to point out, James, because what Project 2025 says is when Reagan was elected, they had a plan together, but they didn't do it well in advance. So it was hard to implement in just 180 days. And they feel the same thing happened with Trump. So the plan this time is to make sure that these people are ready to go on day one. And all of this is going to be rolled out in the first 180 days. So they're not messing around here. I mean, people are already being vetted for these jobs.
Yeah, I mean, that's right. The core strength of our administrative state now, and that's really what this is all about, is, you know, the administrative state, the role it plays in our government. Right now, it's a critical part of our democracy. What Project 2025 ultimately envisions is turning it into a tool of authoritarianism. And what sort of stands between Trump and, or I'm sorry, the Project 2025 authors and that vision is this professional civil service, right? These are tens of thousands of folks who, you know, turn down more lucrative, better jobs in the public sector or private sector, rather, out of, you know, a sense of civil or civic pride, and swore an oath to the Constitution and the law. And, you know, if in effect to put Project 2025 to implement, it requires to ignore the law, to ignore and defy the Constitution. You can't accomplish all of that with the current professional civil service. They got to go. And that's where the Schedule F proposal comes in. You get rid of anybody who's not willing to swear loyalty to the president over their legal obligations. And then you replace them with people who will. Doesn't matter if they're experts or not. In fact, most of these people will not be. They're going to be 25-year-olds, maybe some college education. And the only real training they're getting, this is another sort of aspect of Project 2025 that hasn't received much attention, is they have this what they call academies for training these future bureaucrats. And it's basically a series of YouTube videos, right? You can imagine sort of these frontline workers at the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, no expertise background. All they've done is watch a few YouTube videos on how the NRC operates. It's terrifying to contemplate.
We're going to talk about Schedule F in a minute, but I wanted to also ask you, Sean, what your thoughts are about this, because in the last Trump term, I mean, you had very conservative people stand up to him and say, we are not going to carry this out. And I just think about former Defense Secretary Mark Esper, who says in his memoir that when people were on the streets following the murder of George Floyd, Trump said, quote, can't you just shoot them? Just shoot them in the legs or something? I mean, this is horrific. And this should, I wonder if a lot of people know about this, but this is coming from Mark Esper. So this time around, they do not want people to stand up to Trump. And that is why they're vetting people as we speak. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I'm fascinated by, and I'm trying to find out as much as I can about the vetting and training process that James mentioned. I mean, the vetting and screening application that you mentioned has a lot of questions, which to take James's example of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, it's not clear why somebody who is going to be appointed to the NRC needs to state, as the Project 2025 application asks, their views on gender theory, their views on any number of very socially conservative questions. But those questions are being used to screen all potential appointees. On the training side, the training academy material from Heritage has not been that I know of has not been disclosed, has not really been reported on. I'd certainly love to see it. But I think you're hitting on essentially one of the other central aims of the project is to remove checks on the White House and appointees. And this is sprinkled throughout the document. And one portion, one of the chapters I read most recently on the Department of Homeland Security specifically talks about trying to make sure that the Office of General Counsel, which provides legal advice on whether a given step is legal, that chapter of Project 2025 aims to kind of make sure that the General Counsel is finding ways to say yes instead of standing up to potentially illegal steps, presumably. So the bent of the document is very much to try and find ways to make sure that the find ways to make it faster to implement conservative priorities as opposed to deferring to experts.
Today, we continue our special series on Project 2025, the 920-page plan authored by the Heritage Foundation that would guide a second Trump administration and transform the country into an authoritarian Christian state. You can find our past shows at yourcallradio.org. Today, we're talking about how this would be carried out. How would they deconstruct the administrative state? How would they fire more than 50,000 federal employees and replace them with MAGA loyalists? How would they completely eliminate the Department of Education and then really dismantle many other departments like NOAA? So what questions do you have about how they would actually do this? You can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. Today, we're joined by Sean Musgrave. Sean serves as a counsel for The Intercept. He's also a journalist. You can find his pieces at yourcallradio.org. James Goodwin is policy director for the Center for Progressive Reform. Let's talk about how they would consolidate executive power. Because a lot of people are saying, you know, how would one person, well, and the person's team, fire more than 50,000 federal employees? How would they completely get rid of the Department of Education? I mean, let's say Trump wins in November. Let's say Democrats keep the Senate and then maybe take the House or have one or the other. So if the Democrats have the House or the Senate, how would they go about doing this? So James, why don't we talk about another main plan here is to consolidate executive power.
Yeah, so the special sauce of Project 2025, if I can describe it that way, is it targets this arcane body of law called administrative law. Now, this is like the boring thing people in law school did not do because it was really boring and esoteric. Now it's, you know, sort of the center of this political battle. And if you read the full 920 pages of the Project 2025 blueprint, it's all about finding the little weak spots in administrative law and how those can be exploited to various ends. And one of those ends is, like you say, consolidating executive power. One way it does this is by getting rid of this special category of agencies called independent regulatory agencies. These are agencies that were designed by Congress to have some measure of political insulation for the heads. They couldn't be fired at will. They had to be fired for cause. There's some constitutional debate over whether that's permissible or not. But as far as we know right now, that's perfectly okay under the Constitution. So one of the things Project 2025 calls for is basically challenging that notion, the idea that there could be independent regulatory agencies. It also looks to maximize the number of political appointees in agencies. So you're making these things very top-heavy, hierarchical to increase the president's direct control over frontline workers. There's several calls for different ways of bypassing congressional oversight. You see this in the Department of Defense chapter, and in minimizing public engagement, right? Because one of the crucial features of the administrative state is that it's very small D democratic. If you're an agency, most of the things you do has to involve some measure of public input, and you have to respond to that. Project 2025 finds various ways to marginalize that or avoid that.
So let's talk more about this. Can you talk more about this, Sean? How would they go about increasing power for someone like Donald Trump? How would they go about consolidating executive power?
So a lot of it, I think, does go back to selecting and getting in loyalists from the beginning. That is one of the recruitment and training pillars of Project 2025, getting folks in who will go along with a unified agenda. And then the other thing is to, like I said, to try and get checks out of the way. Some of the independent agencies that James was mentioned are very much on the chopping block. The Supreme Court recently over the past couple of terms has really chipped away at the power of independent regulatory agencies. And so presumably the Trump administration would continue along similar lines.
Well, we're going to take a quick break. Today, we continue our series on Project 2025. We're talking about how this would actually work in practice. I mean, they're out there saying they're going to fire more than 50,000 federal employees, get rid of the Department of Education. Major, major changes here. But how would they go about doing this? That's the topic today. You can find our past shows about Project 2025 at yourcallradio.org. James Goodwin is Policy Director for the Center for Progressive Reform. Sean Musgrave is a media law attorney and reporter in New York who serves as counsel for The Intercept. We'll be back after this. Today, we continue our series on Project 2025. We're talking specifically about how this would be carried out. How would a second Trump term deconstruct the administrative state, fire over 50,000 federal employees, dismantle or entirely eliminate entire government agencies like the Department of Education? How will this actually work? We're talking today with James Goodwin, Policy Director with the Center for Progressive Reform. Sean Musgrave is Senior Counsel and Correspondent for The Intercept. We have a question from a listener related to what we were talking about before, about how they would consolidate executive power. And this listener says, would this be implemented by an executive order from the president or with approval by Congress? James, do you want to take that first?
So a lot of what's in Project 2025 can be accomplished, what is called administratively. So basically using existing legal authorities or constitutional authorities that the president already has. In other words, it doesn't require new laws. That's the really scary stuff, right? Because there's not a whole lot of ways you can stop a President Trump or a conservative president from implementing a lot of these things. Fortunately, there is some things, like some of the more outlandish things, like, you know, getting rid of the Department of Education would require congressional legislation. So some of that would require legislation, unless Republicans get the trifecta in November, and then blow up the filibuster. Some of those recommendations, thankfully, seem unlikely to take place. But, you know, there's still a lot the president can do unilaterally without much legal constraint. So a good example of that is, your listeners have probably heard of the Comstock Act, which is this antiquated law from the late 1800s that professes to ban sending materials related to abortion through the mail. Whether or not this law is still technically good law, the president could, a future Republican president could lean pretty heavily on it to enforce it and to criminalize anybody or to criminally punish somebody who tries to mail anything related to abortion materials through the mail. So that's just one example. Executive orders could be a big part of it. I mean, the important thing about executive orders is they don't create new law. They're just a way of organizing the implementation of law, is probably the best way to think about it, or the implementation of existing authorities. So, yeah, you're going to see a lot of that during the first few weeks of a Trump administration, if he's going to win, because it helps organize how a lot of these recommendations are going to be carried out, so that they're carried out in like a cohesive fashion, but they also raise the public profile of these actions. They give it like a kind of a newsworthiness that, you know, maybe a regulatory proposal which only appears in the Federal Register might not get on its own.
So they might need Congress to eliminate the Department of Education. Would they need Congress, for example, to fully privatize the National Weather Service? That's another plan. Or NOAA, the National Oceanographic and Atmospheric Administration, would be dismantled. Many of its functions would be eliminated and sent to other agencies, privatized, or placed under the control of states. Would they need Congress to carry that out?
A lot of that, fortunately, they would need congressional legislation to do a lot of that. But there's still a lot you can accomplish on the margins that effectively accomplishes a lot of those goals.
So it seems that the media really need to step up. I mean, I'm glad this is getting a lot of attention, but the media need to step up and just outright ask politicians how they feel about, are they supporting Project 2025? Forget how they feel. Supporting Project 2025. Are you going to implement this project? You know, if you keep your seat or you're not up for re-election for four more years, Senator, are you going to implement this plan? I mean, I really thought that CNN would have brought this up during the debate. Unfortunately, it wasn't brought up. And then, unfortunately, Biden did not bring it up. Sean, anything else to add there about what Trump could do on his own versus what would happen if Democrats have the House or the Senate?
Yeah, one of the specific example that I would give, again, comes from the Department of Homeland Security chapter, which is this idea of soft closing. What the author of that chapter says are unnecessary offices within the Department of Homeland Security, shifting staff around to not eliminate the office on paper, but essentially leave it empty. That is something that the Secretary of Homeland Security and their deputies could just do by not staffing a particular office.
Just to talk about the Department of Homeland Security, since you both brought it up a few times, James, you really go deep into what Project 2025 says about Homeland Security. It would consolidate and strengthen enforcement policies at U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement. These include giving individual agents greater leeway to arrest immigrants with suspected criminal records and expand the geographic scope of expedited removal procedures, the summary removal of non-citizens without a hearing. It would permit these procedures to be applied to individuals more than 100 miles from the U.S.-Mexico border, which was the traditional limit, with no apparent bright line geographic restrictions. It would also expand use of the Insurrection Act of 1807, which authorizes the president to use the military for domestic law enforcement purposes under rare extreme circumstances. In 2020, Trump threatened to use this authority to quell the Black Lives Matter protests and was discouraged from doing so by advisors. So once again, the goal is to have advisors who do not discourage him from taking these actions. What else really struck you when you read the chapter about the Department of Homeland Security?
I'm really glad you raised this. And, you know, this is, if your listeners walk away from the show with anything, it's that the most frightening aspects of Project 2025 really come down to his recommendations to a future president on how he or she wields enforcement power. Because that is where, that is like a function that a president has the greatest leeway to exercise under our constitutional system. And so it's no accident that a lot of the really frightening stuff in Project 2025 directly relates to how these enforcement authorities are deployed. Homeland Security, immigration reforms, all about increasing basically enforcement discretion for what you might think of as like frontline agents within the agency, giving them greater discretion to wield some pretty frightening police power over folks under suspicion that they might be undocumented immigrants. Going back to the Insurrection Act, this is about deploying the military against U.S. citizens. Right. This is a law that's been around for centuries, very, very rarely used. But when it is used, it's crossing a political Rubicon. Right. There's no going back once you've sort of deployed this against citizens. And what it basically contemplates is maybe using this against citizens who are merely exercising their First Amendment rights. You know, and during the first Trump administration, you had mentioned using the military against Black Lives Matter protesters. That was the law that was being contemplated right there in that scenario, was the Insurrection Act. And so It's so under our constitutional system, enforcement is an area where the president has the greatest sort of leeway, but there's also important safeguards put in place too, right? So, like the Department of Justice, there's a really strong wall of insulation built between Department of Justice leadership and the Oval Office. And so, not surprisingly, what does Project 2025 call for? Breaking down that wall to give the president more power to direct how the DOJ deploys its enforcement authorities. And again, that's really scary because the way the Department of Justice is supposed to pursue enforcement is fairly. You know, if somebody does something bad, it doesn't matter whether they're a friend or the enemy of the president, they get justice just the same. And that's not what is likely to prevail under what Project 2025 contemplates.
As you write, Project 2025 would degrade the DOJ's independence by injecting greater presidential control into questions of litigation strategy, even raising the disturbing specter of someone like Trump targeting political enemies with enforcement actions. I mean, he's talking about this openly. I think another question that the media should ask him is, did he say, based on what Defense Secretary Mark Esper said, did Trump say during the George Floyd uprising, can't you just shoot protesters? Just shoot them in the legs or something? Would he actually do this? Because if he wins, there's going to be a mass uprising. How is his administration going to respond to this? And we should say that Axios reports that Mark Esper's book was vetted at the highest levels of the Pentagon. Part of the clearance process involved a review by nearly three dozen four-star generals, senior civilians, and cabinet members. And this was in the book that following the George Floyd uprising, Trump said, can't you just shoot the protesters? Just shoot them in the legs or something. So, it would be nice if reporters would ask him this question: is this going to be part of your plan if you take the White House in November? Today, we're speaking with James Goodwin, Policy Director for the Center for Progressive Reform. Sean Musgrave is Senior Counsel and Correspondent for The Intercept. We are continuing our special series on Project 2025. Let's hear from a caller who's been waiting patiently. Let's go to Greg in Palo Alto. Hi, Greg.
Hello. Just remember that the Supreme Court is not going to stand in the way if Trump gets elected of doing this. My guess is they're just going to go along with it, regardless of how unconstitutional or constitutional it might be. The other thing is, there's only 4.5 months to the election, and there's not a lot of time to educate people about this. So it seems to me that the Democrats, like I mentioned in another program, between now and then, the Democrats in every congressional district should be really making this a central issue. And I'm not hearing that. I don't know what's going on across the country or even in California with the congressional representatives and whether or not they're really making this a central point that they're trying to get across to people, not only because of what Trump could do, but how important it would be to get, a Congress that's Democratic.
Well, thank you, Greg. You brought up a couple points there. Let's first talk about the Democrats. So last month, Representative Jared Huffman, who represents Marin in California, announced the formation of a new working group designed to stop Project 2025. And we talked about this on a previous show, but the members are mostly members of the Progressive Caucus. So, Sean, what are your thoughts about how Democrats are or are not responding to Project 2025?
Democrats in the Biden campaign are certainly trying to bring a ton of attention to Project 2025 and really make it part of to make the election as much a referendum on Project 2025 as it is on Trump himself. And the other thing that I see in the camp in the efforts by the Stop Project 2025 folks from various Democrats is to really try to delineate what is in this massive playbook and try to nail down the Trump campaign on which parts of it exactly Trump is trying to distance himself from. I've reached out to the Trump campaign when Trump issued that statement saying he had nothing to do with Project 2025, didn't know anything about it, and asked which parts, if any, he specifically thought were bad in the playbook. And I didn't hear anything back, and I'm not sure anybody really has.
What are your thoughts on how the Democrats are or are not responding to Project 2025, James?
I mean, there's a lot there to put, you know, I think the mistake would be to underestimate the public's capacity for understanding the threat that this poses to democracy. You know, I think one of the problems with the political left in the United States is we often worry that these kinds of issues are too esoteric or too complicated, and that we just have to reduce them to like kitchen table type issues. Like, is this going to make your grocery bill higher every month? You know, I don't think that's the right way to go with this. I think the public really does care about the state of our democracy going forward, the health of our democracy. And that can be a really effective rallying message going forward. You see some doing it, but not nearly enough. I think maybe it's too early to tell for folks on the left. They're still kind of coalescing around maybe a coherent message to respond. But they do need to respond. And one of the reasons I say that is because one of the unfortunate consequences of this whole episode could be that it further sours the public's perception of our administrative state. We already don't like regulators in this country because, you know, they tell us what to do. They're perceived as incompetent. But the problem with Project 2025 is it also raises the possibility that they're inherently dangerous or pose an inherent threat to our democracy. Over the longer term, Democrats really need to think about how to rebut that image, because going forward, so much of what we need to do as a country, so many of the major challenges we face, climate change, future pandemics, artificial intelligence, really does depend on having an effective professional regulatory system.
Greg also brought up the Supreme Court, and we just did a show about the Chevron ruling. Sean, you wrote a piece about this, looking at a number of different rulings from the conservative majority on the Supreme Court, and you write that these decisions further consolidate authority within the federal judiciary. So how does that contribute to the goals of Project 2025?
Well, the recent rulings from the Supreme Court, the Chevron, the ruling overturning Chevron that you mentioned, as well as a ruling about the kind of limiting regulatory agencies like the Securities Exchange Commission, their ability to do administrative proceedings instead of full blown federal court proceedings, the Supreme Court made really cut into the power of regulatory agencies this term. This has been a long-term goal of the conservative legal movement, and it really does advance the central thesis of Project 2025 is to get the administrative state out of the way of accomplishing political goals.
Well, thank you for the call, Greg. We've got a number of emails. Harriet writes, Project 2025 promises to strip public funding of NPR, PBS, Pacifica, and other, quote, leftist broadcasters. You can look it up. You know this, right? Harriet, we actually spoke with John Nichols of The Nation about this about a week ago. He writes that a chapter on public broadcasting proposes to defund the Corporation for Public Broadcasting as part of a larger plan to upend NPR, PBS, and, quote, other public broadcasters that benefit from CPB funding, including the even further to the left Pacifica Radio and American Public Media, end quote. more destabilizing than the total funding cut that Project 2025 entertains is a parallel plan to end the status of NPR and Pacifica radio stations as non-commercial education stations. That could deny them their current channel numbers at the low end of the radio spectrum, a move that would open prime territory on the dial for the sort of religious programming that claims roughly 42% of the airwaves that the FCC reserves for non-commercial broadcasting. So that's a really important point, Harriet, and definitely deserves more attention. Thank you for writing in. Art writes, what can U.S. citizens do now to prevent the implementation of Project 2025? Don't we need the equivalent of a Manhattan Project for the best minds opposed to a U.S. dictatorship? James, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I'm happy to say that I've been working with some pretty good minds here at the Center for Progressive Reform, putting together a blueprint for response. I mean, some of the things that you can do. So, for example, is saving data, important government data that's on websites. These are all things that could be wiped out at the beginning of the second Trump administration. The administration could write legal memoranda establishing or asserting interpretations of laws that are like sort of resolving open legal questions that could help slow down implementation of Project 2025. There's just a lot that the administration can do now to kind of batten down the hatches on the administrative state. They won't stop Project 2025 necessarily, but they will slow down the implementation. And in many ways, running out the four-year clock is like one of the most important things we can do. There's legislation Congress can do. For example, there's bills to prevent something like Schedule F. So something like that, really getting into the weeds. There's things that you can do to prevent abuse of the Federal Advisory Committee Act. I mean, there's these little esoteric areas of administrative law that can be shored up in the interim. Hard to imagine these passing under the current legislature, or how Congress is currently lined up. But you know, this, as you know, when I started at the beginning of this show, I was talking about how much of this political fight is being fought in these dark corners of administrative law, and really to fight back against them, to ultimately prevail, that's where we got to turn our attention.
We're almost out of time, but let's talk a bit about Schedule F and how a second Trump term would go about firing more than 50,000 employees. I mean, can you imagine what people at the Department of Education are thinking right now? They could be fired, and so many other civil servants who could be fired. I mean, there are people in government who've been there for decades who have really dedicated their lives to a variety of issues. As you write, through a policy called Schedule F, Project 2025 seeks to sideline or even purge them. Derived from another of Trump's executive orders, the proposal would reclassify the thousands of career government employees who play some role in policy formation outside of the competitive service, the federal personnel category that includes rigorous merit-based requirements for hiring, firing, and promotion decisions. Stripped of these basic protections, which have been in place for over 140 years, many employees would become at will, fireable for any reason or no reason at all. The intent is obvious: to encourage public servants to obey their political bosses, even when that means going against the law and their own expertise. Were this to take effect, workers who refuse to toe the line could be summarily terminated. So, James, again, would Trump have full power to just fire over 50,000 employees at will?
Yes, and the beauty of it is he doesn't have to. Just the fear that this interim effect that it imposes on all these civil servants, you know, folks that don't want to necessarily lose their job, they're gonna line up if they're afraid to speak out, or they may just keep their heads down and try to make it through 4 years. Others may just resign rather than get fired. You know, particularly folks who are towards the tail end of their career. There's a lot of things that that is in Project 2025 that's aimed at basically scaring these civil servants into compliance. And it, you know, it's beyond Schedule F. There's things that they could do with security clearances at the national security agencies. If you take somebody's security clearance away, they literally cannot do their job, right? And if you don't give it back, you know, what are they going to do? They're probably just going to quit.
And so again, the plan would be to replace them with MAGA loyalists. So based on what we've heard, they want to fire over 50,000 people and then replace them with 20,000. Is that right, James? That's what I'm reading.
I've heard numbers like that, yeah.
And so just to end, you end your piece, James, by saying, you know, what happens if this all succeeds? Once the damage has been done, the task of sustaining minority rule for decades to come will be much easier for the conservative movement. Degrading the institutions of Congress and the federal judiciary were important first steps toward rebuilding the United States in line with its vision of Christian nationalist principles, white supremacy, and economic inequality. Seizing control of the administrative state would be the real prize. You know, I think a couple years ago, if we used these same words, people would say, you're crazy. What are you talking about? But here we are. I mean, can you just talk about how serious they are with this? Because it does sound really out there. I mean, people probably would say, you know, what are you doing if I said some of these things 5, 10 years ago? And we've got about a minute left.
Yeah, and that's really like the strength of this, right? Is it sounds so improbable and unlikely and far-fetched, but it is so probable and so achievable in practice. And, you know, that's part of what makes Project 2025 so terrifying, is it shows just how fragile our constitutional institutions are.
Sean, your final thoughts? We've got about 30 seconds.
As we have a few more weeks left in the election cycle, I think that Project 2025 is going to continue to come up, and this election will really be a referendum on whether this is the vision of government that voters want.
Sean Musgrave is senior counsel and correspondent for The Intercept. James Goodwin is policy director for the Center for Progressive Reform. Sean and James, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much.
Thank you. Thanks to Savannah Harriman-Pote for producing today's show. Thanks to Kevin Vance for engineering our show. And you can find all of the articles we discussed today at kalw.org. Click on News and then Your Call. Thank you for joining us. Tune in next Monday to learn more about what exactly is in the far right's 900-page authoritarian playbook, Project 2025. I'm Rose Aguilar. This is KALW, San Francisco Bay Area.